Coming up next on Tech News Today, our faces are probably part of a big database and civil liberties groups aren't happy about it. Handing that Note 7 over to a Samsung representative at the airport. You might have to wait until 2018 for your Tesla Model 3. Sorry about that. How technology companies are helping with fertility and Google's Pixel phones are apparently really great. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1622, recorded Tuesday, October 18th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/TNT. Just enter promo code TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about everything that happened in technology today. And I want to say that we get, sometimes I delve into the YouTube comments. I put on my protective suit and I get in there and I got a comment saying that we weren't tech news. We were tech opinions.
Okay.
I want to say we're tech news and opinions.
Yeah. I think we kind of do both.
Yeah. We are not dispassionate observers. We are very, very passionate observers.
Yeah. Well, yes, we've got opinions and we talk about them. Is that okay? That's just kind of what we do here.
It's okay. Should we talk about our news and opinions?
So I guess the point of that comment was that we should be tech opinion today.
Tech opinion today. Or tech news and opinion today.
Okay. We'll work on that.
Okay.
We'll see what we can do.
All right. Well, according to The Intercept, 50 civil liberties and human rights groups have sent a letter to the Department of Justice demanding an investigation into the widespread use of facial recognition technology by federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. This comes in response to the new report by the Georgetown Center on Privacy and Technology claiming that half of U.S. adults are already in facial recognition databases, and one quarter of the nation's law enforcement agencies have access to these federal databases, and their use is by and large unregulated. They got your face print, Jason.
Don't you love that?
And you didn't commit any crimes to get in there.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I know of.
Yeah. Fingerprints and DNA haven't seen this like this wide of a net. So this is definitely, there's cause for alarm when you're talking about this kind of stuff. And I think that's what's really got people up in arms, is just the fact that there's this massive database of faces. Whether there was a crime committed to get into that search, which is basically what it all boils down to, or not. The problem is that algorithms that do this sort of thing, like, man, they've come a long way. Like, we see it in the products that we use with Google Photos and Facebook matching and all that kind of stuff. It kind of blows me away sometimes where Facebook is like auto tags people. I'm like, how did it do that? That face was like off in the shadows, yet it still got it right. But the systems aren't perfect, right? There was an article in Tech Dirt, a story of a guy whose face was matched for some bank robbery of some sort. And, you know, they stormed his house, or they actually tricked him into coming outside, and then they tackled him and totally roughed the guy up. He ended up being incarcerated for a couple of months while they kind of figured things out. They realized they had the wrong person. They let him out. They handed the case over to the FBI, who also did their own facial recognition search, and say, well, he matches pretty well, so we should get him. So they arrested him again. You know, it wrecked his life. So it has consequences. I don't know if that overshadowed, you know, the positive of the facial recognition in, you know, cases overshadows the potential kind of downfall of it.
Well, I don't think the report is saying, like, get rid of it. We're done with facial recognition software. They're just saying it needs to be regulated. Like,
for sure.
Everyone needs to know that law enforcement is using this. 26 states have scanned just driver's licenses, just people's faces, innocent people. Studies have found African Americans are more likely to be targeted by facial recognition software. So what they're basically saying is they want Congress to pass laws to regulate the use of facial recognition technology.
Right. And I mean, in the case of this particular story, like how that translates into this is that there really is, from what I could tell, no like threshold that determines what is a perfect match or what is a match enough to then enable, you know, law enforcement to kind of step in and go the next step. Mm-hmm. That really doesn't exist right now. You know, there's a lot of points of similarity in a face that has to be matched in order to get that confidence level up. But there's no regulation that says this is what's required in order to make this an obvious fit. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's needed, obviously. Yahoo reported its earnings, and really, that's about it. In other words, there was no conference call for investors after the report, which makes sense if what you want as a company is to not have to answer hard questions about the hacking of 500-plus accounts. When CEO Marissa Mayer knew about the breach or negative effects it might have on the pending buyout by Verizon, you don't get any of those answers. None of this was on the table. But Yahoo did report that it beat expectations of 14 cents per share with reported earnings of 20 cents per share. Not bad for a company with a huge black cloud that's drifting overhead. Also, user engagement for Q3 was up across the board, which is kind of interesting when you think about that. You're like, wait a minute, why is it suddenly being used? And it has to be people logging into their account to see if they should shut it down or to forward email or whatever, going, wait a minute, that happened? I better log in there and see what happened.
Or maybe it's just that, like, no press is bad press. And people are like, oh, Yahoo? I remember you. I have a Yahoo email. I'm going to check that.
I haven't checked it for spam lately. Let me see what I've got in there.
Yeah.
What gold nuggets?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're really trying to put a bright face on this.
Yeah.
And good for them. Intel also reported earnings today, quarterly revenue of $15.8 billion. They also are up 9% year over year with an operating profit of $4.5 billion. Now, revenue was up from data center chips and the Internet of Things group. The company, of course, still faces challenges that might be alleviated but have not been solved by the roughly 12,000 jobs the company eliminated earlier this year. So Intel is really, I think of as like a canary in the coal mine, kind of for the PC industry, for the electronics industry as a whole. So it's, it's good to pay attention to what they're doing. And it's, I would say they're doing okay.
They're doing okay. Earlier this year, they had announced layoffs of 12,000 employees, restructuring costs that they've, kind of revealed in this quarterly report would reach around $2.3 billion. Because right now, Intel is really kind of focused on kind of changing its, I don't know, the view of the company, its operations, shifting focus away from kind of the PC market that's obviously shrinking in many different ways and into kind of new efforts, VR with Project Alloy, drones, RealSense 3D cameras, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, DIY platforms for wearables, Juul. They're doing all these other things that are kind of a little bit more current and dig them out of that kind of like locked into the PC market hole that I think that they've been in for so very long. And actually, many of those layoffs, I think the study said 79% of those, at least in the US, were of people 40 years or older. So it's also seems to be about getting younger blood in to kind of reinvigorate the company and really kind of think of new ways to forge forward.
Letting go of the olds.
Yep. Apparently that's Intel for you. So what exactly happens when someone shows up to the airport with a Samsung Galaxy Note 7 in hand? Well, they're legally prohibited to take them on the plane. So one can envision the TSA forcing flyers to toss them in the trash along with that bottle of water. Samsung is reportedly setting up customer service desks inside high traffic terminals prior to security screening, where they can choose to swap those devices out for another device. That's, they're offering assistance for data transfer between the phones. And I guess these kind of kiosks are beginning to appear in some South Korean, some Australian, and then U.S. airports, including SFO here in the Bay Area, which I think this is a great idea. I'm very curious to know what device you get.
Yeah.
What they swap you to. Like,
right. Like maybe an Apple Newton or something.
Yes, exactly. Got these lying around.
It's funny, but I think it's a great idea. I mean, yeah. Padre tweeted that he's in Rome and he met like a tourist who brought his Note 7 there before all this happened. And I just wonder, what do you do? Like, you can't fly with it. You just have to throw it in the garbage. So, no, I'm sure there are a lot of people that like ended up maybe not at home and were trying to get home. Mm-hmm. And so being able to return them is good. I mean, gosh, I mean, there's so many tweets that I've seen of people like, I'm in the airport right now and there's someone trying to get someone's S7 from them and they're like, this is not the one that blows up. So it really is a mess. And yeah, they need airport kiosks.
Yeah, I hope that more of these appear. It sounds like it's just kind of starting right now, but now or yesterday or the day before yesterday would have been the right time for these to be everywhere, because I have a feeling this is affecting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Good news, if you ordered a Tesla Model 3 back in the spring, you only have a little over a year to wait for yours. But if you just decided to order it now, you'll be waiting until mid-2018 for the mass market version of the luxury electric car. Now, eagle-eyed followers of Tesla noticed a change on the company's website stating that production would begin in late 2017, when it previously said delivery would begin in late 2017. Now, Tesla says the update does not signal a change in plans, and it's only to update to reflect the timeline for new and future orders. Elon Musk, speaking of moving timelines, Elon Musk also tweeted that he'd have a big announcement yesterday. Now he says it's coming tomorrow. Mm. So he better, he is not so good at reaching the deadlines, Elon Musk.
He's said in the past that his deadlines are true. They're not guesstimates. They actively make those deadlines thinking that they can meet them. But yeah, his track record sometimes, I don't know, maybe it's kind of, proof of just Tesla, at least as a car company, being somewhat new to this whole thing. And granted, they put out a decent amount of vehicles at this point, but that doesn't compare to the legacy of some of the competitors in this space. They've really got delivery down on this stuff, and Tesla's kind of learning that lesson. At the same time, I mean, maybe this makes Tesla's even more desired. It's like the thing you can't have makes you want it more. So maybe that's playing to their strengths.
Maybe. I mean, when this, when they released them in the spring, and I know lots of people who put their money down, it's refundable. But I just can't believe that you could decide what kind of car you'd want to get in 2 years, like what kind of car you would have in 2 years, and just wait for it. You just don't know what's going to come out in between now and then. But there are hundreds of thousands of pre-orders. It's a $35,000 car. And Musk says he's going to produce 500,000 vehicles a year from 2018 to 2020. So you will probably get one if you already are on the waiting list. And I guess this makes sense because, we follow the tech news so much. So we knew when they released the Model 3 that, with people who put their money down, they would have to wait. But if you were just like, my friend just got a Model 3. Like, I want to get one.
I'm going to order one and have them deliver it in a couple of days.
Yeah, it's not going to come in 6 weeks. So you're going to have another year to wait for it. So, and maybe it's worth it and maybe it's not. We don't know.
Yeah, you'll wait because it's a Tesla. It's worth waiting for. That's what they want you to think, Amy. Up next, can technology slow down the biological clock? We'll talk a little bit about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Casper, the sponsor of this episode. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly on to the consumer. But potentially you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Casper combines two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create just an awesome sleep surface. It has just the right sink, just the right balance. You can see right here, Leo's basically unboxing the Casper mattress. Out of the box, it flattens out right away. You jump on it and it's super comfy. The Casper mattress is a 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner. Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. Its breathable design sleeps cool. It helps you regulate your temperature throughout the night, so you're not going to run hot throughout the night. I got my new Casper mattress. It was new a couple of years ago, and then we got another one for our youngest, and we are about to get another one for our oldest. So it's throughout our house at this point. That's just because it's soft, it's comfortable, and once you have another mattress to compare it to, you realize that it's stark contrast, and you're going to want to upgrade your other ones. You can buy it easily online and completely risk free. You can try sleeping on a Casper mattress in your home. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress, that in all reality, you're going to spend a third of your life on these things. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. So you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can do it in the comfort of your home. Did you know statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you? Casper mattress is engineered to meet the Goldilocks standard of just right, so it's not too hard, not too soft, and it upholds the highest environmental production standards and made in the USA. Free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. Get a Casper mattress today. Check it out for yourself. It's $500 for a twin or $950 for a king size. Compared to industry averages, that's an awesome price. And you can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/TNT and entering the promo code TNT. That's casper.com/TNT with promo code TNT. Terms and conditions apply, and we thank Casper for their support.
A brand new $200 million startup attempts to spawn the second sexual revolution, allowing parents to wait to have children without the risks of infertility that come with age. Miguel Helft writes about Prelude Fertility in the November 8th issue of Forbes, and he's here to talk to us about it. Welcome, Miguel.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming on. So first, tell us about the tech entrepreneur behind Prelude, Martin Varsavsky.
Martin Varsavsky was born in Argentina. He came to the U.S. as a teenager and then did most of his entrepreneurial career in Europe. He is one of the most recognized faces in Europe's tech scene. He started a bunch of telecom and internet companies, including Spain's one of the big portals in Spain called Ya.com, another company called Jazztel, another company called Viatel. And he is he's very, very well known in Europe. About a year and a half ago, he returned to the United States to start this company, Prelude Fertility.
So tell us how Prelude will work.
Well, I think we all know about this trend of women, increasingly younger women, choosing to freeze their eggs to preserve their fertility, for whether it's because they haven't found a match, you know, the right mate, or because they have career ambitions that they're putting ahead of family. And what Prelude is doing is jumping on that trend, so to speak, and trying to encourage women to do it. And the way they put it is, if you freeze your eggs younger, and then you do these other steps involved in the Prelude method, you have better odds of having a family, a healthy family, when you want it, on your own terms. And that's what they're marketing on a national basis.
So it's sort of like a one-stop shop. Like a lot of places, you can freeze your eggs one way, one place, and get IVF another place. But like they're going to do it all through Prelude Fertility.
Exactly. If you become a customer and you jump onto what they call the Prelude method, you will freeze your eggs, let's say in your late 20s or early 30s. And then when you're ready, you will create embryos. You'll have those embryos sequenced genetically to find genetic diseases or chromosomal abnormalities. And then they do single embryo transplants to through IVF to try to prevent the risk of twins and triplets and the like. And so it's a lifetime thing. You start being their customer when you decide to freeze your eggs and until you have a live birth or two or three, however many you're planning to have, you remain their customer.
So you wrote this piece on Forbes.com. It'll be a cover story in Forbes. This is kind of the first that many people are hearing about Prelude. And he started, like you said, he started all these different tech companies. How does starting this fertility company, how is that different from the other companies that he's started?
Well, obviously, it's a very different from a tech company, and there's not a lot of tech involved in it beyond sort of the what's already available in the medical community in terms of, egg freezing, egg extraction, IVF, and all that. I think it has some commonalities with businesses in terms of scaling it and marketing it. They've hired Allison Johnson, who was the top marketing executive at Apple, who helped to launch the iPhone and the iPod, to do the marketing for them. And so that's, that's how they're going about it. The main difference with the tech company is the way a tech company is formed is that instead of going to venture capital, they went to private equity and decided to buy into the industry. So they raised $200 million and they spent a few tens of millions buying a leading fertility clinic in the Southeast in Atlanta, and the largest egg freezing bank in the country also in Atlanta. And I think they plan to roll out to other, either through partnerships or further acquisitions, to other fertility clinics around the country.
And Miguel, in your article, you mentioned that the ideal age for this process is 31 to 33 years old, which is a pretty limited, like very small group to focus on. How does that affect kind of the business potential of Prelude?
So that ideal age was based on a study, an academic study that looked at when you get the most bang for your buck, so to speak. That doesn't mean that if you do it younger, actually the younger you extract your eggs, the data shows the more likely those eggs are to convert into healthy embryos or viable embryos and eventually healthy babies. That's the ideal. The way the study came up with that ideal age was based on the notion that if you freeze your eggs much younger than that, you'll get great eggs, but you're less likely to need those eggs because you're likely to find your mate, or whatever decisions you're making about motherhood are going to get resolved naturally without having to go retrieve those eggs. So they're selling this as an insurance policy, so to speak, for women to try to preserve their fertility rather than what happens today. Often women get to their late 30s, then they try to preserve their fertility or to have children, and they have a harder time. Not always, of course. That ideal age is based on an academic study, but they're marketing to a fairly wide range of women, anywhere from say 28 to 35 or so.
Mm-hmm. So, we talk a lot about women in technology here. I think this is probably in the case for women in any kind of business. We're sort of also told that the ideal age to really climbing the corporate ladder is 31 to 33. But I mean, does this sort of, I mean, that's not necessarily true. I mean, we have long lifespans. Like there's no reason to have kids, not to have children in the time, 31 to 33, and then go back and have another career, have more of a career when you're 40 later. Do services like this convince women, push women to, you have to do it now, sort of scare them into thinking you have to have your career now in your 30s because, you're washed up at 40?
So I don't want to speak for the company, and I'm the last person to sort of tell you when a woman should pursue career or family. But I think their philosophy is they're bringing choice to this. Women already have a tremendous amount of pressure. And the women I spoke to who have chosen to freeze their eggs, not through Prelude, which didn't exist, but who have done it recently, in general have talked about feeling liberated, feeling empowered by having the choice. And they talk about pressures, and the pressures are both, if you're a professional woman in your 30s, there's a tremendous amount of pressure to pursue your career, and there's a tremendous amount of pressure to find a mate and settle down and have children. And then both of those coincide. And I think what Prelude wants to do, of course, it's a very personal and individual decision for any woman, but what they want to do is give women choice. And, it's interesting because a couple of years ago, Apple and Facebook were the first companies who started to offer this as a benefit. And some people said, this is going to pressure women at those companies to stay on the career track and freeze their eggs instead. And you could see it one way or the other. The fact is, I think the pressure is there. It's hard to do everything at the same time. And this potentially provides an option for women who want to take up that option to layer things, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. After writing this profile and looking into this company, do you think that people will trust this startup? I mean, I'm thinking of like, you know, all my photos are on Flickr and what are going to happen to them? You know, so like, mm-hmm. Will women decide they're going to put their eggs in this startup that, you know, is brand new?
Well, that remains to be seen. Obviously, we'll see what kind of marketing they come up. You spoke about fear. They're very much talk about education, not fear. They talk about working with OBGYNs so they have, the doctors have the conversations with women about how they're thinking about their paternity, how many kids they want to have and when. And, trust is something a business usually earns over time, not that's predetermined. But, I mean, the fact is they have acquired an egg freezing bank that's the largest in the nation. It accounts, I think, for 40% of the donor eggs. So from a sort of operating procedure, I think they're pretty, they should be reliable.
Well, Miguel, thank you so much for joining us. Miguel Helft is the San Francisco Bureau Chief for Forbes. You can read this story in the magazine that comes out November 8th or read it online at Forbes.com right now. Thanks so much, Miguel.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Miguel. Take care. Rob Collins wrote in about yesterday's story regarding the nomenclature around autopilot with Tesla vehicles. Rob writes, I asked my Google assistant how autopilot works, and it basically just holds the current position the plane is already in, essentially just locking the controls in place so the plane won't drift while the pilot deals with something else. There's a system in most aircrafts that can fly the plane for you, but it's not the autopilot. It's called co-pilot. That is why Tesla is technically correct, but he says, I agree with changing the name. It's really just an advanced cruise control. And I mean, that actually kind of illustrates probably the issue at hand, is I think people see autopilot and they do think co-pilot. You know, I actually didn't know about the term co-pilot. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming up, Steve Kovac from Business Insider says he might get a Pixel instead of the iPhone 7. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. We are all used to losing our possessions. Newsweek reports that the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things they own but cannot find. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. And I can tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, computers, bicycles, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items via key loop or adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to a year. You can add a laser-engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, like return or pet info. You can now personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It is that easy. Your phone can track up to 10 different devices at once. Customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. If you lose your phone, press the button on the tracker and your phone will ring, even if it's on silent. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. And if you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within a 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. So go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today.
All right, Google's Pixel devices signal the beginning of a new era of Android devices, and Google has made a lot of promises with the new lineup. Joining us to give us his take on the new phones is senior correspondent with Business Insider, Steve Kovac. How's it going, Steve?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. It's great to get you on again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been way too long.
Yes, we agree. So thank you for joining us tonight. So tell us a little bit about these phones. Do they live up to Google's hype? Is this Google's iPhone, as some people are saying?
Oh, definitely. So I've been using it for the past week or so, and after all these years, this is the first Android phone I've used that made me consider, maybe I should buy this thing. It's exactly what they pitched at that event on October 4th. Streamlined, designed by Google hardware and software, and Google Assistant just blows Siri out of the water. It is amazing. And it's not perfect, of course, but it's only going to get better as you use it more, as more people use it, as it learns. It's just a fantastic phone. My only real qualms with it are the design and the fact that it's missing certain things like water resistance, which, you know, Samsung phones and Apple phones have. But other than that, I mean, it's just a great device.
Is there anything built into kind of the hardware design itself that doesn't appeal to you? Like, I know a large complaint is the lack of water resistance. I know in seeing it online, seeing that kind of glass plate, the half glass back, kind of looks strange the first couple of times. Now I guess my eyes are a little bit more adjusted to it. But does it feel like a nice, tight, solid, pixely device, I suppose?
Oh, yeah, it feels great. That glass on the back, I don't like how it looks on the black version, but on the white version, which I haven't actually gotten my hands on, I've only been testing the black version, but it seems to look better on that white and silver version. Yeah, the photo you guys are showing now from our review, it looks kind of weird, right? But, you know, it does look like very similar to the iPhone 7, which is already feeling like a dated design itself. Mm-hmm. So it would have been nice to see out of, you know, with such impressive, you know, it's fast. All the internal components are great. The camera is excellent. Everything is great about this phone. It would have been nice to see them push design forward a little bit, like we've been seeing Samsung do recently.
Sure.
So what you said, you really like the Google Assistant. What about it? Is there anything new about it, or is it the same? Like, is it just Google Now rebranded as Google Assistant?
No. No, Google Now actually is still part of the Pixel. So if you swipe over on the Pixel, Google Now is there. It's the same Google Now you're used to using on iOS and Android. So that's always there for the proactive stuff. You know, as you know, Google Now is there saying, you know, your Amazon package is coming or whatever. But Assistant is there for the reactive stuff. I need this to happen. Where's the nearest restaurant? Can I get a reservation? Play this song for me from Google Music. You send a text message to, you know, Jason, all that kind of stuff that you've known from Siri. But it takes it a step further, and it really taps into that Google knowledge graph. So, you know, you can just ask it so many questions and it'll deliver you the right answer, which is Google is just so much better equipped to do that than Amazon with Alexa and Apple with Siri.
It does seem to be way ahead. I mean, Apple, you know, in iOS 10 just started telling me, you know, in Maps, now it knows like, oh, you're 10 minutes from work or you're, you know, and gives me directions. It's like Google has been doing that for like 5 years already, you know, and Apple's just there. It's like, okay, great. Thank you for telling me how to get to work. I could have used that 5 years ago. So you like it.
Yeah, and I think that's the real key thing that sets this phone apart. It's, you know, it's relatively easy to make nice hardware. There are plenty of great phones out there we're seeing from Huawei, and they're cheap too, you know, $400 or $500. So how do you take it to the next level? Well, you put in these great services like AI assistants, like Google Now, and Google is just positioned to do that so much better than Apple is, so much better than Samsung is. And so, you know, from a hardware perspective, sure, it's boring. We're used to a lot of this stuff now. So what makes this phone exciting and sets it apart is the assistant, is all this intelligence, even in things like the camera. The burst mode, you take a bunch of photos, it'll pick out the best photo for you. Unlimited storage for high-res photos and videos and Google Photos, that's huge. There are just so many great advantages to it on a software and services level you can't get in any other phone. That's what really excites me about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great hardware out there, and you know, and then there's, I guess, bad hardware. But there's also a lot of companies who have tried to innovate with software and have failed miserably at it, or you know, the software ends up getting in the way instead of actually being super useful. This obviously isn't plain Android. You know, here you've got, this is like Google's TouchWiz. You know, Samsung has TouchWiz. This is kind of Google's take on what it would do to Android to, you know, make it better. Do you think these software enhancements boost it beyond kind of the vanilla Android, as it were, in previous like Nexus devices, or do they get in the way? Are they super useful?
No, I think it's super useful, especially that dock, that little tray that you swipe up from the bottom and to view all of your apps. It's just like, how has no one thought of that before? It's just a very natural motion to swipe up and get all your apps right there in alphabetical order. launching assistant from the soft home button, same thing. And then that little Google on the home screen, you probably notice that little Google icon. You tap that, and that brings you right back to the regular search bar, so you can search for anything in Google. Just very thoughtful UI elements. Whereas, you know, you look at Samsung phones, you look at LG phones, and they're just still bogged down. You buy, you know, most Android phones you buy, you have two or three email apps that come preloaded. You have a bunch of carrier apps. You have all these modifications that either bog down the phone or you don't need. And this has none of that. And again, my one thing I forgot to say is my favorite thing is you get updates. So,
right.
I think most people, Nougat came out a couple months ago or whatever. You'll be lucky to be, most people using Android phones now will be lucky to be on Nougat a year from now. This is the only way to guarantee you're going to get the software updates right from Google, right as they come out. Even the Nexus phones can't guarantee that anymore.
Yeah, it's true. I wonder what the long-term ramification is going to be about that in the eyes of the general consumer. Like, I think, you know, long-term, Google wants this to be its, you know, Android's iPhone. And what does that mean? That means that essentially it's the device that comes from Google that everybody, when they think of Android, let's say, they think of that device as being the cream of the crop. And if it actually does this up-to-date updates the way that they are promising, and I have no reason to doubt that Google will stick to that. It's coming direct from Google, so why wouldn't it? I do wonder if that's going to apply some much-needed pressure to competitors in the space to step up their game, because now suddenly you've got the iPhone of Android doing this. Should we expect everyone else to follow suit? What do you think?
You hope so. I'm not optimistic that can happen just by the nature of the ecosystem. There are so many players involved, and ego is involved too. So, you know, let's just take Samsung, for example. They like to set their devices apart too. So they put that TouchWiz skin on it. They try to add their own like cool, unique features, the stuff that you have on the curved screens and all those software elements. And so when a new version of Android comes out, they have to, you know, start over and figure out how to noodle with it. And then once they do that, they have to submit it here in the U.S. They have to submit it to the carriers, and the carriers have to go through this massive approval process. And that, you know, by the time all that's done, it's months and months or a year later. And so I'm just not optimistic that this can really fix that fragmentation problem and that slow update problem. The best way to get the best of Android is to buy one of these Pixels.
Yeah, for sure. And that's going to set you back a little bit because they are kind of pricey. But
it ain't cheap.
Yeah, yeah. I do have a question about that. I mean, do you think, Android is the most popular operating system in the world and in a lot of places where people can't afford a $700 phone. I mean, do you think that they're really do you think this is risky for them to make this phone, to make this like the best version of Android, or not really? Because what competitors do they have?
Right. There is no other super premium Android phone that can do what this phone can do. So they have that advantage, and the cost is baked in. And if you can afford it, I always tell people it's fine to spend, you know, $700-$800 on a phone because you're using it all day, every day for 2 years. You meter the cost out and how much you're using it. Is it really that expensive? And there's a payment plan too. So Google will finance the phone for you. And if you feel more comfortable paying, I forget what the breakdown is, it's like $30-something a month. If you feel more comfortable doing that structure interest-free, go for that. Then you pay $30 a month to Google, and you get this great premium phone.
Right, right. And then there was, of course, one question in chat from somebody who's concerned kind of about Google's dedication, which was another kind of concern that I've had. Google loves to like jump onto these things and be like, this is what we're doing now, man. We're on board 100%. And a couple of years later, you realize, whatever, squirrel. And they look over the other direction.
That is very Google, right?
Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to happen with this effort. I kind of feel no, because it really does seem like they realize that in order for them to kind of write some of the many wrongs that Android has had and criticisms that it's had over the years, that this is kind of a necessary next step. And I don't see why they would abandon that. But
well, and look at it this way. They've formed an entire division under Rick Osterloh to finally unify their hardware ambitions. I don't think they would have done that if they weren't serious. They're, you know, everything was fragmented. You know, they had Nest doing their own thing, and then the Alphabet thing happened, and that fragmented things even more. And now they're like, okay, we're pulling this all under Google. We're going to have one guy in charge and trickle it down. You know, all these hardware projects go, I mean, trickle up through him. And you can already see how that's working. I feel more confident about it than I have in the past from what we've seen from them.
Yeah, agreed. Steve Kovac, always a pleasure getting you on, man. Thanks so much for jumping on tonight and telling us your thoughts on the Pixel phones.
And I'll be back Sunday for the big show.
Oh, excellent. All right, so catch Steve on This Week in Tech this Sunday. Thanks again, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Bye.
Later.
TNT's fan of the day is Ray Franklin on Twitter, who says he sometimes watches at a car wash in Daytona Beach, Florida. There he is, watching you.
So many people watching at the car wash.
At the car wash.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or just your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
We were promised jetpacks in the future and now someone is ready to deliver. But before we discuss that and see something that I might have to spend a lot of money on someday if I ever get rich, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. Going through the whole mortgage process is not an enjoyable process normally because you have to pull all this information from all over the place. If you're just a scatterbrain like I am, it's just not enjoyable. But you do it because you want that house at the end. You want to be able to secure that mortgage, and that's just a great target. Getting there, a little challenging. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It makes it a little bit easier for you. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for mortgage out of the equation. So if you hate searching through stacks of old files, old paperwork, all that kind of stuff, well, with Rocket Mortgage, you don't have to do that. You can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. It's going to help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process. You can manage it even, you know, just sitting there on the couch in your pajamas. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or to buy a home, you want to check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Jetpack Aviation just showed off its JB10, and it's my newest obsession. If you have $250,000 burning a hole through your pocket, then you could soon purchase one for yourself. It's capable of flying up to 3 miles high at speeds of up to 60 miles per hour. However, you know, don't expect this to be your travel workhorse or the way you get to work. It can only fly for up to 10 minutes at a time. But this is what we've come to expect from science fiction jetpacks. This looks, you know, it's not like overly cumbersome. You can actually carry, like, I think it's light enough to for you to just carry it, one person to carry it. I want one.
Why can't I take it to work? It only takes me 10 minutes to get to work.
But what if you get caught in air traffic and, no, that wouldn't happen.
The takeoff is my favorite, which I think you're there. It was just... Oh. It's just like, and I love that the pilot is the CEO. He's CEO and chief test pilot, David Maiman. He really believes he's not going to die.
He's the only one crazy enough to do it.
Yeah. It runs on jet fuel. That's my only problem. I wish it ran on like bacon grease or something.
Yeah, that would be nice. That's the next iteration. That'll probably cost you a cool $500,000 extra in order to make that happen. But I mean, this is like... I feel like we've seen little steps here and there towards this sort of thing, but it always has, you know, maybe it has a tether or it's huge and, you know, this is like portable. This is what you need. So then my question is $250,000 mm-hmm. for one of these. Mm-hmm. Virgin Galactic sells trips to space for $200,000 to $250,000. Which do you buy with your mythical $250,000? Which one do you do?
That is a good question. I do this.
You do this?
Yeah.
Because over and over and over again, mm-hmm. you can enjoy it?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
Yeah. It just looks pretty great. I mean, I watch the full video on YouTube if you have a minute, just because he's tethered to the ground at first. They have to like untether him with a clip, and then he's... It is amazing.
I mean, the thought of like spiraling out of control on it is enough to make me think I might never want to do it until I know for sure that it can protect me from me, because I'm pretty sure I'd screw it up. And that doesn't sound fun at all. So then off to space I go. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
So we are on the internet. We are on YouTube. We are on Spotify. We're all these places. We're also on the Amazon Echo, the whole episode, and also the Flash Briefing. Every day you can get updates on the latest tech news and events from Leo, Jason, and myself. To hear Twit's Flash Briefing, be sure to go to your settings in the Alexa app, search for Twit, and subscribe. It's a great way to start your morning. You can find all the other ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to you, Burke, for scrolling words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for editing. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.